We are just like a college, except for we don't bring you the debt. We're also gonna, you know, have the opportunity to make a lot of money.
You're listening to the Union Up Podcast, a podcast with conversations on issues facing business managers and local trade unions across the country.
Construction has seemed to weather the COVID-19 pandemic. In fact, the future looks very bright. And I wanted to talk about the immediate future of construction with leaders in our market in terms of legislation coming down the pike, in terms of how to manage construction projects moving forward through the pandemic, and in terms of the future of construction. And joining me today are three leaders in the trade unions here in the Southeast: Robert Duffield, who is the business manager for the Iron Workers Local 387, Wimblish Owens, who is the business manager for the Operative Plasterers and Cement Masons International Association Local 148, and Randy Beal, who is the business manager for the Atlanta North Georgia Building Trades Council. Gentlemen, welcome to Union Up.
Thank you.
So guys, the House Democrats introduced the Invest in America bill, which is a $494 billion infrastructure bill to improve roads, bridges, mass transits, et cetera. And if it's passed, it would provide $83 billion for COVID-19 relief projects, recovery projects, $28 billion for bridge construction, $8 billion for carbon reduction, $49 billion for local transportation, $9 billion for large highway transit, freight, et cetera. And I wanted to ask you guys how that will affect you moving forward, say over the next 3 to 5 years, what effect it will have on your jurisdictions particularly, and what kind of manpower are you going to need in terms of recruiting and organizing people into your local? And Robert, I'd like to start with you first.
Infrastructure projects, historically we've had difficulty getting into it and working with it. There's large contractors that have sort of cornered the market, and there's problems with classification, the expressway, the toll bypass that they have. A lot of the iron work that they've done, they've classified as carpentry work, or they call them carpenters, and we've organized some of those members into the iron work, and you know, we hadn't been able to get much headway. We've even, a couple years ago, they were having problems getting workers. And so the previous manager for the Atlanta North Georgia Building Trades had to send letters to the contractor saying that we had workers available. And basically they put out the notification so they can try and bring in the, I think it's the HB2 visas. Mm-hmm. And so we made no headway in Georgia with that, sending out notification, contacting our state representatives, and really didn't get anything out of it, you know. And we're trying to find, we're on a big push trying to gain work in industry and also, you know, in the heavy and highway sectors. And it's just been difficult to get in there, you know. One contractor, a small contractor owned by a female, came in, and she wanted to use us. She was putting in bracing in between the concrete girders on raised road deck. And basically, without saying so much in words, the contractor above her said, no, you're not going to use union. And so, you know, there's... over time, a lot of places, and especially in the Southeast, there's a big push to close the door on us. I think more and more people are seeing the value in it, in being union, but we've got a long, steep hill to climb.
Yeah, for sure. Wimblish, what about you? What's your take on the incoming infusion of cash into infrastructure projects like that?
Yeah, I definitely will welcome it. I know Iron National will definitely do that. I think it's great. Gives us great opportunity, you know, to provide our services. But like Robert said, A lot of these major contractors, specifically the generals, GCs, they will have that pretty much locked, and it'd be a little tough for us to try to get it organized. But not saying we cannot get it organized, but just knowing down the pike that these things are happening kind of gives us a leg up, okay? So I would look forward to that, okay? Because we have the manpower, definitely.
Randy, have you been following that, and what's your take on that in terms of the opportunity for the building trades unions as overall?
Yeah, sure, Rut. So, you know, I would like to tell you that I have a differing opinion than my two co-guests, but I do not. Nationally, you know, the building trade infrastructure projects, and they, you know, they worked with President Trump in the beginning to try to get a bill passed, and it just died from lack of effort, I think, on his part, meaning President Trump's part and Congress's part. And we were supposed to gain a lot of man hours and a lot of work from those projects. If that happens, that's fabulous. I'd like to see it happen. The problem in Georgia, and I think there's an article today in the AJC that names one particular contractor. My co-guests know who I'm talking about, but they're predominantly who does the construction work on roads and bridges in Georgia. I won't grace them by saying their name, but they somehow just have a direct in, and I don't even know if bids matter, to be honest with you, because I don't see how they could win the amount of projects they win over and over and over and over again. You know, so anyway, it's a difficult sector for us. However, let's talk about if we did land it, you know, how that looks related to COVID. And you may get there in another question, but, you know, it would be a great opportunity for us to organize and a great opportunity to help out underrepresented, underserved communities. So while we're hopeful and we will push our local politicians to do the right thing, our biggest hurdle is, however, this one particular contractor has been able to manage to yoke up with and become so friendly with the state government that it doesn't appear to me anybody can beat them.
Interesting. With all the investment in construction that looks like it's about to happen, and the fact that we're still dealing with COVID-19, most locals have postponed their last meetings as an example. How do you balance between prosperity and safety on the job site? What are you telling your members? I guess this question would be for Robert.
I mean, the biggest thing over time, okay, I had members in the beginning back in March that felt they were underrepresented, that were given into contractors, and explaining to them that, okay, that we have obligations to the contractors through our contract. Our contractors have obligations to us. So, like, no strike, no work stoppage, but also no lockouts, you know. And explaining to them that, you know, there are some members that want to work and there's some members that need to work. Because when the unemployment and they added the $600, I had members that were furloughed and laid off, but it took 5 to 6 weeks to get a first payment. And some members, they make a good wage, but they find a way to spend that wage as soon as they get it. And so it was important to make sure that they were following guidelines, making sure that they understand, you know, don't go, you know, you have to change your daily habits. You can't go to the gas station every day to get your coffee. You know, you want to avoid contact outside of those that are essential to you, meaning your family, and then also on the job site. You know, and on the job site, you know, in normal situations, because a lot of the work we do is miscellaneous work, putting in stairs, stuff like that. And so it's an access point for all the trades to move from floor to floor to do their work. But making sure that, you know, any unnecessary sort of proximity, being close to anybody, that if it's not necessarily, you know, don't do it. You know, at break, where you would normally sit right next to your buddy, make sure that y'all are maintaining good distances, that if you don't feel well, don't go in, you know, that we maintain contact with contractors, make sure they're working to make sure the job site's safe, make sure that there's sanitary, you know, items out there. I know there was a lot of issues with getting hand sanitizer and cleaning wipes and masks, and some of that has alleviated a little bit, but you know, still, even now that things seem to be slowing down, if you look at Texas and Florida and Arizona and I think California and Oregon, you know, they're starting to spike up again. So making sure our members understand that this isn't over, you know. We had our meeting this month and we had our meeting last month, but whereas, you know, usually in our meeting hall, we can hold probably about 120 people seated. We've got it down to where there's only 60 seats in there, and all of them separated pretty good and maintaining those separations here at the hall.
Yeah.
And then at our training center, everything is by appointment now. We still want to have it available as necessity arises, but that we want to make sure we're following good policy and showing that to the members and trying to guide them in their daily activities.
Yeah.
Right. Sorry, this is Randy. I want to pipe in and say that, you know, when it comes to the COVID and construction site, first of all, the leadership, you know, it starts from the top down. And I want to say that our leadership team, our business managers at every local union in the initial phases and even today have taken extraordinary measures to protect their membership at the office, from their staff to their memberships, and we canceled meetings when, you know, they really needed to have meetings, but in order to do the right thing and to protect their memberships, they did that. They did a great job negotiating with their contractors and making sure, number one, safety the priority, but number two, that jobs stayed open and that people continued to get paychecks and that their members had an opportunity to go to work. And I would say that lastly, that, you know, this isn't talked about a lot, but in the North Atlanta, North Georgia area, the powerhouse work that we had up at Plant Bowen, I think there was over 700 craftspeople up there on a job. And I think there was, Robert, you may can correct me if I'm wrong, might have been one or two cases of COVID on that entire project of 700. And I think if you just add that to the fleet of Southern Company across Alabama and Mississippi, I think the total was three cases in all of the outages. So while there are instances of large breakouts on some jobs, not in our area, but I just want to say, I think our guys have done a tremendous job protecting their membership, not only from COVID, but from protecting their members from the financial impact that could happen. So I think that needs to be said.
Yeah. So several contractors have workers making more in unemployment right now than they would making on the job, at least until that runs out, which I think is July 31st. And some business managers are having in certain locals are having trouble filling job calls. Are your contractors experiencing the same thing, Randy? I guess this would be an overall question, but are the contractors experiencing the same thing here? And what feedback are you getting from the members about that?
Yeah, so I'll let the manager speak about feedback from members, but I can tell you as an overall, yes, the answer is our biggest problem, Rudd, is not a softening of the construction market. It's not infrastructure where we started out this conversation. It's not COVID. It's we're fighting a large unemployment paycheck, one that used to be 600, now is 1,000. And quite honestly, yes, people who are at risk, people above 55 and have other issues, certainly that is there for them, and that's great. But for people that are not at risk, we're finding that they're taking that money and maybe they're going, you know, to do other things or fishing, whatever it may be. I don't know. But the bottom line is that is our biggest competition at the moment. That's what I hear from larger local unions. And so I don't know Robert and Wimblish's personal experience, but that is what I have heard.
Robert, what's your take on that?
We've had people that, you know, have because of the situation, and some were unemployed prior to everything sort of starting to shut down. A lot of the contractors, when it did come, they slowed down on their job calls. Jobs are starting to open up now, and we are experiencing that issue, the additional funds in the unemployment, making it so some people are less likely to go back to work. You know, at the same time, some members, it's not that, it's that they do have their concerns with the COVID, and the possibility of contracting it. You know, we're getting jobs filled. It's taking a little bit longer. I think we have more boomers than we would normally, travelers that we'd have normally, because of the membership. Right now we got about 10%, maybe 8% of our membership is out of work. But we do have travelers coming in, because getting some of the jobs filled has been a little difficult because of the unemployment.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. So, I want to shift gears for a second. I've been reading several articles in Forbes, Chicago Tribune, even the New York Post, Construction Dive, et cetera, that indicate that one of the possible consequences of this pandemic will be the rise in labor unions, an interest in labor unions, I should say, as a means to protect workers. How do you feel about that? And have you seen an uptick in interest in your local as a result of that?
Who's that for?
I would say, I would like to, you know, respond to that. Really right now, we definitely right now still have a small, organized, group of, contractors, but, we don't see much of any of our members right now that's very positive, you know, test positive for the COVID-19. But, we have some members that just took voluntary because they, you know, some type of symptoms. But I do see our work, increasing. That's where we are at. That's right now we're spotty, but I truly believe, because you got to look at earlier this year, we had a lot of rain, and talking to a lot of the contractors, they were slow. So just speaking to the contractors now, due to the COVID-19, they are kind of, the work is a little slow, but we're looking to see it pick up a little later in the year.
Robert, what's your take on that? Have you seen an uptick in interest overall in terms of your local, because the locals have been, the trade unions have been really good at the safety conversation to begin with, and since the pandemic has really raised awareness of that. Are you seeing an uptick in interest in labor unions from your locals' perspective?
Yeah. I mean, we are getting more interest. We're getting a lot of applications. Our training center is also getting applications. Some of them from the technical schools that train in welding, others from just kids out of high school. One of our biggest issues right now is if we can't increase our market presence, we don't have jobs for them, you right. know? And so a big thing is trying to level that field to where the represented contractor has the same opportunity, especially when you have public funds in it. The represented contractor, all they do is they're working with an agreement, a contract between them and their workforce. Whereas the unrepresented contractor, they don't have that. But in the Southeast, there's been a big push going back to when prevailing wage was passed, to where the message is that unions aren't good for business, you know, and it's, you know, the cost isn't that much more. And if you look at public projects and you look at, say, sports stadium, and when those public funds and those taxpayer funds are paid either by the county, the city, or the state, you can have that project built by those residents and increase the working ability and the ability of that person to set roots in that community to where they can sooner or later buy a house or something like that. And it creates stability, and that person has buy-in because now they're part of that community. They're not just renting part of that community.
Yeah. Randy, your take on that.
Yeah. So, I'm not sure that the uptick in applications or interest in the trades is directly related to our ability to ensure safety and COVID, safety in regards to COVID. I do believe that it is because people have seen that throughout this pandemic, right, that we have maintained a steady workforce.
Yeah.
And, you know, construction jobs hasn't stopped for the most part. And, you know, so, you know, what some people may have viewed as, an up and down industry, and although construction can be a little bit up and down, peaks and valleys, I think that's been the biggest draw for people, you know, that if you're out there working, whether it be, in a restaurant or retail or whatever it may be, you know, the business stops, the checks stop. But, you know, when they see construction workers still going to work every day, and then they see the money that the construction workers are making, threefold what they're making in their chosen fields, I think that's been the biggest draw.
Yeah.
Again, I think that, and the reason why is I don't think that it's the knowledge of the general public in regards to what unions do in protecting their benefits and protecting their safety on the job, and all of those things. I still don't think we're getting the word out enough about that. And so I really think it's a combination of there's work out there. They see other people still gainfully employed, and they want to be a part of that kind of longstanding great career.
Yeah. I also think that because COVID has exposed what essentially is, you know, two categories of business. One is essential business and the other is non-essential business. You got a lot of people, young people particularly, who are in a current field, you know, maybe it's retail, maybe it's restaurants, whatever. And they're like, man, there's got to be a better way where I can maintain my employment, you know, and be, and I'm thinking I should get in more of an essential field. Is that a fair assessment?
It is. I will give you one instance for sure. Just real quick, is our youth build program that the Atlanta North Georgia Building Trades runs through our charity, our 501c3. When this COVID thing started, we up until about a month ago, we had 25 people signed up for our mental toughness class to decide who gets in the program. And in the last month, that spiked to over 90 people.
Wow.
To come on our list, our waiting list. And anyway, I think all of that is a combination of what you just said, Bud, and what I had mentioned about the opportunities for work.
Wimblish, what's your take on that?
Well, we are seeing an increase of membership, you know, even though we're going through a COVID-19, especially in the state of Tennessee. We've got a lot of work there. And then also increase of membership in the state of Alabama due to the Toyota Mazda plant that's coming out of the ground. You're looking at 3.6 million square foot of concrete. Okay, you got several buildings to go up. And then also we're seeing an increase, and I'm surprised, with our apprenticeship program, and I oversee that. We're still constantly getting our young people that are interested in the program. We have them signed up. We have them attending classes. So, really, even though we're going through the pandemic, we still, looks like our membership is holding steady. Okay. Look forward to in the latter part of the year for things to even get better.
Yeah. So, and one thing that I think that just came to mind there is that I think you got a lot of young people who see maybe that some of their older peers or maybe then themselves They see a lot of this college debt. They're taking, these kids are going to college because they've been told they need to go to college, and they have mountains of debt. And you get out of college, you got $100,000 in debt. You basically have a mortgage and you don't have a house. And what we try to do in recruiting campaigns that we run for several different locals is, that's one of the points we make is, you know, there, regardless of your background, regardless of your history, regardless of your situation, there is a track for you to through an apprenticeship program where you basically go through that. If you're willing to put the sweat equity into it, your education will be free. And by the time you turn out as a journeyman, at the end of that, you will have an excellent wage. You will have excellent benefits. You'll have an excellent retirement, et cetera. And that's just, that's a conversation that hasn't happened maybe pre-COVID, but as COVID has kind of reshaped the landscape, people are thinking about, hey, this is, you know, this is different. This is a different landscape. Maybe I don't want to go to college. Maybe I can find another area to build a career in. Is that a fair assessment, Wimbley?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
You're listening to the Union Up Podcast, a podcast with conversations on issues facing business managers and local trade unions across the country. Hosted by Rutland Walker, founder of Union Up. Union Up develops marketing programs that help local trade unions to recruit new members, grow market share, and increase contractor roles. For more information, visit unionup.net.
Well, what I was asking was, a lot of young people are in debt in college, and there's people are rethinking that and thinking there's got to be a better way where I can learn and be accredited in something,
right?
And not take on a bunch of debt. And the apprenticeship programs that the local trade unions have are excellent ways to do that. It doesn't matter where you come from or your background or whatever. If you're willing to put the sweat equity in it and you're willing to do the work, then we've got a track for you over a four or five year period where you can turn out as a journeyman and have an excellent wage, have an excellent retirement, et cetera, and not have any debt.
Right. And speaking on that, I remember when, a long time ago when I was young, they pushed college for everybody, and not everybody is meant to go to college, which is a big thing. And so nowadays, either you go to college, you go in the military, you try and find something to do. And, schools didn't push trades for a long, long time. And in the most of the factories that were there in your hometown, they're gone. Where I grew up, there were three factories. By the time I graduated high school, they were gone. These young people need opportunity. If they don't have opportunity, then that causes stress to them and stuff like that. You look at a lot of college students that go and they do rack up that debt. And then when they're done, there's not a job for them in their skilled area. And, the building trades and, what we do at our apprenticeships is train them for a profession that they can earn a good living, that they can, have a good retirement at the end of their career. And a lot of them don't think about that when they're young, but they earn a good wage and they can plant roots and they can build a family and take care of that family.
Yeah. Randy, I was reading about the Construction Education Foundation, which held a webinar recently. It had over 500 high school counselors attend. And it seems like schools are waking up to that message, to Robert's point, that skilled trades are an excellent place for a young person to pursue a career outside of going to college.
Yes.
What are you currently doing to educate and recruit high school students and grads? And you've touched on this a little bit. What can they expect if they come to a building trade?
Of course, we're advertising and marketing. We're involving ourselves in sponsorship opportunities at high schools. The Corky Kell Kickoff Classic, we'll be heavily involved in that, getting the message out to high school kids and parents. Mainly I think, Rut, you got to educate the parents.
Agreed.
But, if you educate the parents, then, the kids come along. I think one of the problems is, trying to get a lot of times parents push their kids to go to college because I think it's, they want to say to whoever their friends that, well, my kid attends UGA or whatever. They don't want to say, hey, my kid's a plumber or my kid's a, whatever. But in all reality, it as people become more enlightened about the opportunities, the monies that can be made, and the fact that, you know, we're a skilled, trained workforce. And, you know, Robert's program, they're going to school 4 or 5 years, Wimbledish 4 to 5 years, sheet metal 4 to 5 years.
Yep.
You know, we are just like a college, except for we don't bring you the debt. We're also going to, you know, have the opportunity to make a lot of money. And I want to say this, that let's don't forget about our females. We typically will think this is totally a male-driven industry, and it's not. My sister-in-law is a sheet metal worker. She made $96,000 last year. So we need to do a better job in recruiting those females too, that don't want to be X, Y, or Z. They can be construction workers. And so we're turning every table we know how to turn as far as high school students and getting involved with counselors. The other thing, Rhett, that I think that has been a negative for putting people into the trades for a long time has been the fact that high schools are rated based on this index of how many kids they get going into college. And when people go buy homes, they look at how the school systems are. All those ratings are driven on the fact of how many of those people go to college. I've been talking to legislators about in Georgia about having our approved Department of Labor, Bureau of Apprenticeship and Training, apprenticeship schools be a part of that equation. So we don't want schools. I don't want schools to be not penalized is not the word. I want them to be credited when they send a student to an apprenticeship school. If we could get that done, I think you will find another large uptick in counselors wanting to send kids to apprenticeship schools. Without that measure, there's a little bit of reluctancy on the counselors' parts because counselors are there to do a job, and that is to make that school look as good as possible, and so are the educators. And if too many of them out of a school system go to the trades, those index numbers drop and people lose jobs. So
yeah.
That's something that needs to be changed.
Yeah, agreed. Go ahead.
Can I interject just a little
sure.
bit? Can I, you know, with some of these high schools, they do have what you call a VOTEC, and some of the you know, young men and women, they select those VOTEC, and they select specific trades like electrical, woodworking, et cetera. But what I've noticed, there's no direct link to get into the union building trades, and I think we just need to do a much better job ourselves in creating that link. So we'll get a minute.
On that, because probably about a good 25% of the iron worker trade is welding, and a lot of these schools that do have welding programs, they yep. sort of, rather than a lot of them feeding them to the trades, a lot of them are feeding them to tech schools that they're going to charge yes. them, teach them that portion. They're going to teach them how to weld, but they're not going to teach them everything involved with the trade that's
right.
to the iron workers or the pipe fitters, you know, everybody that uses that. And so some of them, they don't end up $100,000 in debt, but I do know some students that we've gotten, they owe $17,000, $20,000 for taking a welding program. You know, they can learn that at the different trades that have that as part of their apprenticeship.
Yeah, and some of the schools, you don't even get the welding accreditation. You have to go to school, you get a degree, but you don't get the certifications. You have to get those aside from that. So you got, you know, tuition debt, and you don't even really get your certifications.
Yeah.
Right, but the high school gets credit as if that kid went to University of Georgia.
Right.
And that's because it's part mm-hmm. of the college system. That's why they push them that way, and that's why that legislation really needs to be changed to include approved registered apprenticeship programs.
Yeah, agreed. One thing that I think comes up too that's timely right now, there's a lot of talk, and rightly so, about equality. And one of the things and this has been the way it's been, as I understand it, from the trade unions for forever, really, is that it doesn't matter where you come from, sex, race, whatever. what if a first year apprentice makes a first year apprentice wage, third year, journeyman, journeyman, et cetera. There's no discrimination whatsoever right. in terms of wages. And I think that's a popular message right now.
Yes.
Would you say so, Wimblish?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Definitely. The doors are wide open for women, especially minorities. Like myself, when I started, it was very few minorities in union building trades. But over the years, that has really changed. Okay. And what I see now is more and more minorities looking to get into the union building trades. So, like I said, just our local union itself, we're starting to see a nice rise in females' interest in getting into our apprenticeship program. Okay, so I agree.
From an economic development perspective, it seems like businesses in many states who are having trouble getting cooperation from their home states are looking to more business-friendly states like Georgia and other states in the Southeast. Have you had similar discussions, Randy, and how do you see that affecting the construction trades here in Georgia and the Southeast?
And specifically, you're talking about like workforce development, the offices and their increased monies that they have to spend to educate workforce. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, and I'm also talking about industries, the governmental entities here are trying to attract business to the Southeast because it's, quote, a more business-friendly state.
I got you. So, you know, listen, there's some positives on that, but there are also some negatives. You know, we're in a state that doesn't necessarily adhere to the collective bargaining rights of people are the best move. And so, you know, we can attract all businesses in the world. For instance, let's look at the $1.5 billion battery plant that's going on up in Commerce, Georgia, that is relatively 99% open shop. And matter of fact, working multitudes of H-2B visas with Koreans, and that is a Korean battery factory plant. There's been little concern on behalf of the state government that the people up here working on H-2B visas are not even in this country under construction visa. They're there under restaurant visas or other, and there's no concern about people who are in the construction industry who are out of work that live in that area. So you know, it's great to be a state that's open to bring business in, but it's another thing to be a state that is more business minded than worker minded. Yeah. And I really think that's where the state of Georgia is.
Yeah, and one of the things, in a tangential point here, one of the things that Governor Kemp in Georgia has implemented is allowing private plan review and inspection companies to keep jobs moving because COVID is keeping so many inspectors and staffs not from not working. Do you feel that's wise? And how do you feel that affects the trade unions on job sites?
Well, I mean, I think personally, this is a personal statement. I think that the governor decided to open the state a little soon. I think Robert mentioned earlier those states that are the COVID is up on the rise. Georgia's one of them. The highest case, counts we had back in March was 1,500 in one day. Last Friday we had 1,083 in one day, and that climbed over a one-day period from 800 to 1,083. I haven't checked today, but encouraging businesses to stay open, I think, puts people at risk. We know, but we also know people have to make a living. We know we got to keep the economy moving. All these things are important. And it's a risky balance, right, of what is right and what is wrong. But for me, there's one life is too many lives. So, you know, that's why, you know, in the construction industry, it's totally different than in a restaurant or whatever industry. Our guys and ladies are working mostly in open environment. We know that the COVID does not transfer as easily outside as it does indoors. So, you know, while there's some areas that we could, you know, fully open the door back up and other areas that we cannot, I think, I think it looks good to business, right? I think it looks great to business and people that's on that side of the fence, but I think there's a very little concern overall about working men and women. And I almost think that people, some people have taken the attitude that at all costs, we're going to do what we got to do to keep things open. And we know that people are going to get infected and we know people are going to die, and that's okay. And that's not Randy's opinion. I think that's how other people look at it. And I don't agree with that philosophy at all.
So, Robert, how do you manage that balance between prosperity and safety on the job as it relates to the iron workers?
I mean, in the field, I mean, we want to maintain, that the thing about like collective bargaining, the collective bargaining agreement and our contractors that we deal with, it's a partnership, it's no longer us versus them. The only time we're sort of adversarials when we sit down for negotiations, and to negotiate the next contract. And so we want to help them out, and we have conversations weekly with them to make sure we're maintaining the safe work environment, make sure that testing's going on the site and everything like that. I think everybody got to a point, all of our workers got to a point where they understood that, I need to maintain distances, wear the masks, and be safe. I think issues that with reopening, sort of like Randy said, when you reopen and it's not done, I think there's people that are going to get a false sense of security that, well, the state's opening back up, so I'm fine to go back to my normal life. But when it first started and we looked and we talked to the contractors, talked to the members, found, like I said earlier, that there were members that needed to work, wanted to work. Some didn't, and explaining to them that, there's no gate that's locked. So if you don't feel safe, we can work to get you a layoff. But that the gate opens both ways, sort of, for those that want to work. And, making sure that we maintain that communication now even more so than when it was first starting up, because there was so much information coming out. But you look at states trying to have a balance, and I understand having a balance, trying to get, the economy back going. But at the same time, if you don't maintain that safety, then we're going to get right back where we were, only worse. Like Randy said, you had over 1,000 in one day, and it's if it continues to go up, it'll bypass what happened before.
Yeah, and I imagine with the new environment that we're in here, even as things, even as the cases begin to wane, I think there's going to be some lasting effects. One of which is jobs may take longer. Is that a fair assessment?
I think, some activities, yeah, they're going to take longer. I think that they're, currently we've experienced that some of our projects that were set to start have actually been delayed. One of our contractors, our main miscellaneous contractor that does stairs and handrails and stuff, they were looking at being in a bind where they were going to need about 30 additional iron workers by the end of July. And with the COVID stuff, a lot of the owners and general contractors pushed back work, and it sort of worked it out to where we don't need those iron workers. And so that's why it's important to continually try and expand our market in other areas. I think for the most part, the members, we're getting good communication from our members and our contractors. We're maintaining contact with the job sites. And there is a lot of work, that has slowed down as far as its completion points have been pushed back, yes.
Right. So last question, and I want to thank you guys for joining me, and I'll start with Wimblish. In your opinion, what's the future of construction in the Southeast for your specific local, and what are the biggest challenges you face in the next few years as business manager?
Okay, I see the future in the Southeast looking very good.
in our industry, because like you said, the infrastructure work, okay, heavy highway, which, and then we're talking about, you know, we have contracts with industrial companies, and that is really start to increase, okay? So I really see that our area is definitely within the next 5 years going to continue to grow. That's exactly what I see. Okay. Now the challenge is the qualified members and what we need to do, and what I've already put it out when we had our union meetings. We're not having them right now, but journeyman upgrade. That's how you meet these challenges. Okay. Because we got new products coming out, new equipment. But that's how we meet it. Okay. We get out there and we increase the manpower based on our workload. But I do see a good future for the upper class of cement masons industry.
Robert, what's your take on it? What's your biggest challenge moving forward, and what do you see as the future of construction in your jurisdiction?
I think a lot of our biggest challenges is the current climate in the state of Georgia. I see it changing. And a lot of this is political climate. But I think it's our biggest challenge is to make sure that our representatives, and like I said, I feel that Georgia's in sort of transition right now, but as Georgia does transition, I think it's important that the trades hold our representatives accountable, when we have conversations about stuff like right to work, about having a fair playing field for all contractors, the buddy system that puts these huge contractors over virtually all the work in the state of Georgia on different aspects, is that the taxpayers of the state pay for this stuff, whether it goes up to the federal government and comes back here, or it's state funds, and to be in a state that they've made it so that you cannot have PLAs if state funds are involved, stuff like that, is not a good climate for labor. And, you know, labor is workforce. And so that's the entire state of Georgia, everybody in it. And so, it might change part of the business climate of the state, but it will make it a better state for the people that work for a living.
One thing, if you want to cut this in, but you talked about the slowdown of jobs. I just want to say that there are jobs out there that, like Emory Hospital, that was in the news back when COVID was dominating the news, that the CEO of Emory talked about how two floors of the hospital got opened much, much quicker. I'm talking about 3 to 4 or 5 months quicker than they were supposed to. What wasn't told in that story is that was union labor. That job was like 80%, 90% union labor. And so I think that's important to know, that jobs like that, you know, union labor stepped up and delivered product months ahead of schedule to meet the needs of our surrounding community.
And what... That's an undertold story. Why was that the case? I know the answer, but I want people to know what your opinion. Why was that the case? Was it because of the training? What's the reason there?
How did we accomplish that?
Right.
Yeah, you know, I think it's when you look at the training of the apprenticeship programs and the ongoing training of a journey person. We forget about that. You know, our journey people go back and get training as well to continue to upgrade their skills on a continual basis. When you put the very best trained people, they're the most skilled at any construction job. When you put those people on any given project around the gambit of all the construction services, whether it's concrete, whether it's steel, electrical, whatever it could be, when you've got all of those talented people working together, you can accomplish things so much faster than if you have a discombobulated workforce. And I think it's our training. I think it's our leadership. I think that it's our quality and our skill.
Beautiful. Very, very good point. Excellent. great conversation. Wimblish Owens, Robert Duffield, yep. Randy Beal, thank you so much for joining Union Up.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Union Up, a podcast with conversations on issues facing business managers and local trade unions across the country. For more information on this podcast or to help your local grow, visit unionup.net.